not necessarily going to look at the scriptures I have here on top of that. You can, but I just got some things listed. You may already have a question. I'm not going to get to the end, then ask questions. But if you have something that may reach out, I won't cover this exhaustively. But I think there's some things that you bring to the forefront. And then, Brother Pritchett, if somebody comes in or whatever, you can leave some in the back there. They can just hand them as they come in so they wonder what they missed out on. But charge them $5. Number one there, it's not what you serve, it's whom you serve. We had to keep that in mind as we serve the Lord. And I'm preaching to the choir now as far as that. And don't work for the Lord, work with him. You know, sometimes, and certainly he is overseer, and he's our God, there's no doubt about it, but sometimes he wants to work with us, co-laborers, as far as that. And that's exciting. That's why we say, well, what do you think we ought to do about this? Rather than, this is what I'm going to do about this. That intimacy will renew and encourage you, because you're traveling with the Lord in this event. Working for God will turn you into working for God will turn you into an employee. Now, I'm not dismissing his authority over us, okay? So please don't be remiss in thinking that, wait a minute, he's God. And that's true. But he wants to be co-laborers with us in serving. Working with the Lord, you will not only be more active, you'll be more effective rather than working for him in that. Because obviously, if he is, we're the co-pilot, and we're not even that, by the way. He is the one that should engineer this thing and steer it. Nothing is more important than our time with the Lord. It will keep you soft-hearted. It really will. The more you not read your Bible, you may not have this liability, but I can still remember catching myself. I was reading the Bible because I got to get a message together. See, what do they need this week, Lord? Now, I know you probably never did that, but if you find yourself doing it, it's really written for your admonition and edification. And as you do that, God will give you what you have need of and gives me what I have need of. We're only here for a short time. It's hard to believe. I'll be 73 next month. I try to stay in fairly decent shape. I ran a marathon last month. I know it. It's dumbest thing I've ever done. That's why I look so bad. I hate to run. I have a son that pastors. He's 45. He's in good health, good shape. He never was in athletics as far as sports. I was. So if you give me a ball or a stick or anything else to chase, I'll do it. My philosophy is like many of you, if I ever drove down the road and saw somebody who's running alongside the road with a smile on their face, I may consider doing it. But I've never seen one of those runners smiling. they're tearing it up. And then, of course, just a little illustration about a man who went to a village and went to see a wise man there. And wise man opened the door and saw how little furniture he had in there. And, he said, is this all you have? He said, what do you have? And he said, well, I'm not here that long in this village. And the old man said, I'm not here long either. And we're not. You know, it comes and goes, and some of us, you think of 50 years, in my situation, I think, wow, where did it go? You're not here for a long time, but live under those circumstances. We're not involved in a business, but war. It's a war. I remember hearing Lester Olof, it's a battlefield, brother, not a recreation room. It's a war, not a game. Yeah. Run if you want to, run if you will. But I came here to stay. Boy, he was something. No doubt about that. Bless his heart. The biggest disappointment, pray for those who hurt you the most. It makes it impossible to hold evil feelings against them if you pray for them. Right. Bring them before the Lord. The day you stop loving them is the day you stop serving them. Jesus said, forgive them. No one has been hurt as he has. They've done things to us, lied about us, done things and whatnot, but the fact is what they do to our Lord Jesus, who never sinned, never did wrong. As far as that. Serving others means opening your heart and loving them, and that makes you vulnerable. After a while, you get tore up, and it's hard for us to put ourselves back out there, but we're servants, and we can keep serving. God will take care of us, give what we have need of. Do not make changes during the storm. You know, and some difficulties come in your life, you may make the same decision. People came to me and asked me if they could do something or something was right or wrong. If I didn't know, I'd say, well, if you need to know an answer, have an answer right now, the answer is no. But if you give me a little time to think about it, it may be yes. And buy time if you don't know. You know, don't just say, well, they want the answer now. So, well, let me, this will get them. Let me pray about it. Then they'll back off a little. Yeah, well, that'd be something. Don't make changes in a storm. Not one. A decision made in the middle of the night will be right. And I don't mean that, Susie, wait a minute, 2 o'clock in the morning, that's when God called me to preach or whatever. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in the storm, you know, and the pressure's on and everything. You know, we want to certainly have the Lord's mind on that. Never harbor resentment, because resentment harbors bitterness that will end up killing you. And it really will. I remember hearing a preacher say, who was nationally known because of an incident that took place at his church that I think with the law that was unlawful for the law to do it, but he said, I'd pass if it wasn't for people. Tell me how that works out for you. He said, I'd pastor if it wasn't for people. He got out of the pastorate. That's what we do. We pastor. A scowling, sour, disgruntled look often is a desperate cry that is saying, I need a smile. You know, when you have people that confront you about issues and stuff like that, they're hurting inside. There was a lady in our church many years ago when we first started, and she was mowing her lawn. Her husband was, you know, I want to say a jerk, but I guess that wouldn't be fair. But he just was unkind. He just was to her and everything else. Well, she was mowing the lawn. And they had a little side hill on in their lawn, and she was on a riding lawnmower. And the thing is the lawnmower started tipping over, so she put her foot out to catch herself. Her foot went underneath, and the rotary blades caught off her big toe. He didn't have anything to do with church. He didn't want nothing to do with it and everything else. Well, the church, our church, I don't know, the ladies were so gracious. They went over and cleaned the house. They did the laundry for her. They brought meals every night for like 6-8 weeks. Now, which is nice. I mean, they did it on their own. Well, one night, a Wednesday night, whoever the lady was supposed to take the meal over that Wednesday night, forgot. He came home from work, says, where's my dinner? You know, his wife's laid up, can't walk on her foot yet, and he's mad because they didn't bring him his dinner. I mean, he did nothing than what he had done before when his wife was healthy and well. Hell, I got them both tied up. Sorry about that. But as far as being well, and the thing is, he came down to church Wednesday night. I'm getting ready for Wednesday night. We had a little white wood frame church building we had rented, and then we bought it and everything. And he come in the back door, and he started using language that I remember the words. And so finally it was before church started. And so I said, well, come on. We'll, and I asked him something you never ask somebody, and that's, let's go outside. So I said, well, come on, let's go outside in the parking lot at the back of the church. We get out there and he's going up and down me like a Venetian blind verbally. I'm thinking, here's this guy, stinking guy, hadn't done a piece of laundry. Hasn't, you know, got the groceries, hasn't, you know, I mean, nothing. And man, he was mad because one person forgot to bring the meal over. My old nature wanted to take over. Now, my dad said, if you're going to fight somebody, don't go outside. Start it right there. You know, it's nothing fair about it. So start it right there. But anyway, so I didn't start a fight. So I didn't get in a fight with anybody. That'd been real good in the paper. But, and when he got done going over me, I said, you know what, Richard? You're going through a tough time. Your wife's been injured. And I can understand how you know, this has been rough on your family, you and your wife and everything. And so I apologize. I am sorry that we forgot to bring that meal over. Well, I think he was hoping to fight me or something like that or rile me up or whatever. And he just kind of stood there and went, he got in his car and left. you know what to do. The thing is that, I mean, the guy was being a fool. But it wouldn't have made any difference for me to get in an argument with him and help him to know that. Now, I ran into him later, you know, years of the road, and he didn't want anything to do with me. You know, he's certainly not saved, but he just didn't have anything to do with the gospel. But the thing is he wasn't going to be able to say that Tim Young yelled at him and called him an idiot and, you know, anything else. We did what we could. And so sometimes when those people are like that, what they need is just somebody, you know, to not make that an issue, you know, as far as that. Because it had been very easy to do, the flesh. People you minister to, people with problems, good people, fellow warriors, disciples, people with resources, and I don't mean money, though that's a nice thing to have, resources, but actually abilities, opportunities. You know, they can provide something to the church. They're a plumber, they're an electrician. Those are resources. And they're a great asset and a great blessing in that. My whole existence in life has to do with relationships with the Lord and others and with myself. Keep that in mind. People is the business we're in, is people. We should spend more time with people with resources. Now, again, not talking about money. Money is talking about that have been given gifts, abilities, or whatever, warriors or disciples. We're going to do what we can to build and edify the body of Christ. Don't abandon the seed you planted with excitement and hope. Sometimes we abandon when we start sowing seed with somebody and we say, oh, it doesn't make any difference. You know, forget it. Don't let go of the plow you have fastened your life to only to be stuck in the middle of an abandoned field. Some people do that. They don't want to do that. Rips in the soul. When the unexplainable happens, it's a foolish and stupid thing to think I'm worthy to ask God to explain himself. We're supposed to figure out, saying, Lord, teach me from this. What do I need to learn? A true winner is not someone who does not seek difficulty, but rather one who is not frightened by them and does not retreat or turn back. Soldiers just don't die in war. They die in a particular, and part of that is they die in a particular battle. And what is it over? In that. It's a particular battle. When the unexplained happens, the Lord may be erasing something because he is going to write something new. We never know what the next chapter is going to be. We never do. It's easy to serve when everything is going well, but the hard times in life will lend credibility to your service and depth to your words. When your folks know you're going through a difficult time, but yet you're staying faithful, steadfast, your spirit is right, you may have to work on it. But they're learning from that. Have you ever noticed that our kids are a lot like us because they hang around us when they're growing up? It's scary, isn't it? Or it was a mistake, wasn't it? But the thing is they will replicate what you do in given situation. A tragedy happens, and I'll mention it in the next message, but we had two men. The 80s were very different than what they are now, and I'm not making excuses or anything like that, but I'm just saying that back in the 80s, we started a church in 1980, and there were 46 houses in the little village, Crossroads, that we started in. We were still in that village, and at that time, in six years, on April 27th, 1986, we were going to have 500 people in church the first time we ever had that. And so we had David Gibbs from CLA, we've been dear friends for a long time with them, he and his wife, Gloria, and he was going to come and speak. Well, we had 72 adults that went out soul winning on Saturday. They went out, we had coffee and whatnot, we divided up, sent different direction, knock on doors, visit people to visit the church, trying to get everybody there as much as possible. I sent two men out, Glenn Hunt and Mike Shadler. And they were going to go to a place actually named Sodus, is the name of the town, and they were going to go there and knock on doors. I came back at noon. We had a bite to eat. Everybody's rejoicing. We're going to go back out again till about 3:30. We're going to come back, give testimonies, and then we're going to go home and pray that the Lord would bring the folks the next day. I got back about shortly after 3 because we were getting ready for that afternoon testimony, and two men came up to me and said, Pastor Mike and Glenn were killed in a car accident. And I said, David, that's not even funny. He said, no. He said, Anita and Carol over in the morgue at the hospital had two men killed out soul winning on a big, you know, the first big day we were going to have 500 people. So I went over to the morgue, and the coroner wouldn't let the wives see the husbands. because of the damage. There were three people killed in the accident. It wasn't their fault. Somebody ran a stop sign. And the thing is I, went over there, identified the bodies and so forth, because they had the wallets and everything, so it really wasn't a major thing. But the fact is really, those are the times that you grow. It's not a matter of saying, well, this is just great, Lord. We're going to have a big day, and it's all messed up now. We didn't know the big day was on that Saturday, soul winning. It wasn't the 500 people that came. There was 502, actually, that came. David Gibb did come and was very helpful in that whole court case and everything. But the fact is, that did more for our families and marriages. As they saw, one widow was 27 years old. The other one was about 30 years old. One had two children. One was not in school yet. The other one was like a second grader. The other one had a two and a half year old. It did more for our church on that day than it did on Sunday. So when those difficult times come, don't think the devil. Now, obviously, to me, it was like in a solar plexus. And I mean, I was operating on whatever, reserve. For a while. I saw those two guys alive, the last person that saw them alive, I did. They pulled up to a stoplight at the next little town from the village we were in, and they stopped. And me, being a smart aleck at about 35 years old, I pulled up and bumped the back of their bumper like that. Glenn was passenger, and he leaned out and said, call an ambulance, my neck, because I didn't even hardly bump him hard, he's gonna sue me for millions of dollars. We laughed, they laughed, and they took a left. Never saw him alive again. Isn't that amazing? You just never know what's going to take place. I wrote Brother Hiles, said Brother Hiles, and told him the story. I said, you never taught us about this in college. And he sent a letter back, and he said, you know what? He said, I have never experienced anything like that in my ministry. So I'm not saying that now it was a great learning experience. Looking back on what the Lord was doing at that time, I couldn't figure out what was going on as far as that. And I can't say it spelled it out other than the fact that it affected the families and the church and husbands and wives to realize that's how fast it happens. It's amazing. It's easy to serve when everything is going well, obviously, but we learn underneath there. Ministries are killed by being led by people who have miles of influences, but only inches of depth. We need to walk with the Lord. I don't know how you do that in your own personal life, but you better. It's tough. You have an enemy who's trying to do everything he can to thwart your efforts. So you need to put on that full armor. Times of drought cause us to sink our roots deep into the earth looking for water. In the church growing, it was amazing because there were times it would seem like people were coming and visitors were coming that we didn't even knock on their door, but we were out door knocking and the church was growing and everything. And then all of a sudden, it'd be like placid for months. And you think, well, I think in retrospect, I look back and say the Lord was helping us to grow those new converts and strengthen those new people coming in before he gave another a flow of them coming into the church. And he does that, obviously. So the ebb and flow. Don't compare yourself to other ministries. You pastor a different people, a different location. I preached a missions conference back in the 90s for a fella. He had moved into a particular location in 1986. 1994, I'm preaching a missions conference. He had went to a church that probably just had 20, 30 people in there. By 1994, he had 2,300 people in church. And I mean, he had his bus ministry, 300 people, he had to bring them in on Saturday because there wasn't any room on Sunday to bring them. And what was happening is 50,000 people a year were moving into like maybe three or four towns in that area. They were moving out of a city because of the cost of living in that city, and they were moving out. He said, we'd have traffic jams of U-Haul trucks in intersections. I never had that problem. You know what I mean? Out of 50,000, and by the way, now their uncles aren't there and their grandmother's church isn't there and they don't have their friends down the neighborhood and their own babysitters and doctors. They're looking for all those things. So I'm not gonna say, compare my, well, he's lucky. I don't know, I'm sure he probably got You know, God gives out talents as he sees fit. And we ought to use them as he sees fit as far as that. But I don't ever regret having risked everything for what was important to me. And we ought to be that way. Put it all out there. There's a fellow I'm helping to get elected to Congress. He made contact with me and wanted me to have dinner with him tonight. I said, I won't be able to. I'll be in Wisconsin. But the thing is, his father, who was Rocky Frotto, you don't remember him because he was fighting for the world championship in the 70s. Some of you may remember, if you watch boxing. But his father, and his father lost the championship, the world championship at that weight class. But his dad and this young man, he's an attorney, but he's working a business, a granite business for his family. It's been like three or four generations in there. And but his dad always said, "You son, leave everything in the ring. Give it all. Don't get out and say, you know what, I think I could have gone a little bit farther." You know, he's talking, and that's the way we ought to be. Don't worry about regret risking everything. One of the most powerful credentials of a ministry is your marriage. We don't think so, and I know as a young man, you probably weren't like this, but I just assumed she knew what she was supposed to do. We were gone to Bible college, and we were married before we went to college. I was 25 years old when we went, and you know, I just assumed, but you know, I wasn't smart enough to realize what some people need to realize is that that's the greatest testimony you have is your family. You lose your family. Well, God's called me to preach. Yeah, well, he called you to be a husband too. And a family. Fellas, we can't do that. We can't fall apart and expect our wives. They're not our assistant pastor. Now, many times they're very capable, very good at what they do. And the reason I would say that to Brother Weiss about, you know, don't stop and say, honey, was there any other announcements you had? You're putting all the attention of people demanding from her information. First of all, she's got to put up with you. Secondly, she's raising kids. She's probably got at least one ministry. My wife, I said, honey, all I ask you is to be in one ministry. That's all. That's all I'm expecting you to do. Now, at starting a church, I'm not talking about walking into something that's already rolling. Just one ministry. If you happen to be involved in others, that's your choice, but you've got your priorities and you do what you can. But honestly, it's important. That's the reason you don't want to put more on them. Ask my wife about that. That's a personal opinion. She's not your assistant pastor. And sometimes as a result, they become the target in the church. You don't want to do that. They're just trying to raise their family and love their husband. You stuck them in this situation. It is. In every marriage more than a week old, there's grounds for divorce. Mike, would you like to comment? You've been married 50 weeks. All right. The trick is to find and continue to find grounds for marriage and for the marriage. If you want to be want a healthy and solid ministry, do not focus on what astounds, but rather what transforms. We're in the transforming business. That's our key as far as that. Now, we'll open up for questions. I think I have a schedule here. I went almost 15 minutes over. I thought I was supposed to go to 2:15, but I weren't. Excuse the English. And it's like 3:15. So we got a few minutes as far as that. Now, you asking a question, I may give you an answer. I won't be specific because I don't know who's in your church or what kind of church you is or what your personality is. So sometimes it has to be a generic answer. I've heard people answer a specific question. And the guy said, you know, I can't do that because, you know, and they really literally can't. So you may have a question, may not. And by the way, I'm going to open it up and I may say, is anybody here, you know, that's, you know, been married longer than 50 weeks, or anybody that's been in the ministry for several years. I'm not going to pick on you. I found out that his dad pastored where I did, about 15 miles away in Lyons, New York. Because when he said Marshall on the end, I said, man, I was trying to think as far as that. But his dad was involved in the military and chaplaincy and everything like that. And apparently he went to the Great Lakes to work there for a while. And so I guess I didn't know Mike when he was a young man. Glad to meet him now. But anyway, if there's somebody here that may be able to help in some areas, anybody have any kind of question? You may question somebody else. Here's a couple questions that Brother Weiss gave me. It wasn't for him. He just was opening it up. This is not him. What should I do with my wife when she? No, I'm only kidding. No.
That was the private conversation.
Yeah, right. That's right. Oh, that was on the, yeah, that was when you, yeah, this is between you and I. Now, what lines of accessibility do you draw with the church as far as cell phones or people contacting you? That's a personal thing. I think you ought to keep your family in mind, you know, that, you know, I here's what I did. When I said, folks, I appreciate when you allow my time with my family to be my time with my family. And now if you've got something, I mean, you know, if somebody, you know, an urgency or whatever, hospital or whatever the case may be, and you want to give me a call, no problem. But if your cat died, God bless you, get another one. But I would say that from the pulpit when nobody had called me in the evening before. Some people make the mistake of saying, please don't call me at home when you're asking me about something. You could ask me next, you know, Wednesday night or whatever the case. I never, you know, reflected on anybody. If somebody did something, I wait at least 6 months sometimes before I mentioned it. I'm not trying to aim it at anybody. But I when I come home, they got to call and say, hey, preacher, what are you up to? Well, I'm up to eating my dinner. Or whatever. The thing is you know, that's, I guess, that, I don't know if that answers your question, accessibility. They don't call the office anymore because a lot of times we have an office at home or at your cell phone. I've had people say, how come you didn't answer your phone? And I guess it depends on how you answer this, but sometimes I'd say, well, say this, you aren't going to believe us. But I got my cell phone for my use, not for your use. You know, that's why I got it, you know. And so, you know, just trying to, and then trying to make it somewhat light as far as that. So if you're plagued, accessibility, it really depends on what you want. But I think, you know, my priority is obviously the ministry as far as that, but also, you know, my family with that and my bride. And so we did what we could, and our folks, and I thanked them. And what you're doing in thanking them, you're letting them know, please don't call at 7 o'clock at night and you want to draw. Or 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock or whatever, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. You still up? No, yeah, I had to answer the phone. That's why, you know. So, you know, that I don't know if that answers it, Brother Weiss. Is that something like that? Anybody else got a thought on that? Some of you guys have been around the ministry a while and you realize you already set some parameters and people have found. Let me ask you this. You've been in the ministry a while and you, your people pretty well know that that time is yours. Now, you may let them call anytime you want. I don't have a problem with that at all. I'm not trying to say you shouldn't. But if you had anybody come, it's Frank, and I'll be here another hour, honey, so I'm going to go in the other room. And you know how you feel about that. Anybody got a thought about that? Yes, sir.
I often will text back an answer to the call.
Yeah.
If it's like reading or
something. Right. When you answer back, are you referring them to another time, possibly?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's a great idea.
Set up an appointment.
Yeah, yeah. I'm busy right now. Could you give me a call in the morning or something like that? Yeah, no, that's a great idea. Anybody else have that? Brother Mark, was it Mark? Okay. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And another thing is, I get so many texts or calls. I know it's your day off, but.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to call me, don't remind me. But very often in those situations, if it's someone that usually never bothers me, oh man, I'm going to call them.
Yeah.
But if it's the typical people, you know, the difficult people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. That's a good idea as well as far as that. I remember when the landlines, I never answered the phone at home. I couldn't. I didn't want to talk to anybody. that bad? Because then they might not, I don't remember if we had caller ID or whatever, we had landline or whatever the case may be, but you know, it go maybe go to answer machine or something like that. But the I thing is, it people have to be trained, and it's the way you want it, not the way I want it. But mine was like, when I'm home, Brother Mike. There is a museum in Madison that you might be able to see that. That along with a record player, and another, you know, notables. How's that? Oh, could you get off the phone so somebody can make a phone call? Or was that the unique ring for your house? You know, in other words, you had two longs and a short or whatever the case, as far as that. Now, we're not even going to try to help you understand that, Michael. You're going to have to get the book. Sir?
Leave a message. I'll call you when I can.
Yeah, good. No, you know what I do? I had a good friend, Navy SEAL, and you call him, and this is what his answer machine said. You've reached the phone of the world's greatest psychic, so I know who you are and I know why you called, so just hang up. That's all that was on his answer machine. If I'm lying, I'm dying. That's what he said as far as that. No, that's good. Please leave a message as far as that. So, yeah, people that immediate access is really a tough thing. So a person would have to feel like this is what I could do. But I think in introducing it to people, you need to do it in the, you know, train them and do it in a positive sense. Saying, I appreciate you folks allow us to have a family life and an evening at home with the family and stuff. Man, I know guys that, you know, I'm not telling lie, find out somebody that gets bothered by the phone. But saying, I know people that, you know, they're constantly calling maybe about little things or something or questions or whatever. They certainly could wait till later. But I appreciate you being conscious. Now, if there's something important, Brother Weiss.
One of the things that bothered me early in the ministry when texting became a bigger issue, calls weren't a problem, but it was just people texting.
Oh, yeah.
And that, it might be a personal thing with me, but that would be, my stress level would go up when I hear the ding of the text. And it wasn't necessarily that people were texting with big problems. I felt a little bit guilty about it, but it has helped me. My phone automatically is set to a do not disturb setting after a certain time at night to where if somebody needs me, they can call and it will come through, but text
yeah.
will come through.
And then maybe...
Yeah,
no, that's true. I agree with you as far as that. I won't call you, but I'm going to text you 9,000 times. I don't know about you, but that's the only way they could get me to call. Because you read a text, they don't put everything they want to say. And you get a piece of it, and you think, what are they talking about? And then you say, no, I wasn't talking about it. And you, you know, say, call me. But yeah, no, that's true. That constant contact, think about that, is really, and I think as a preacher, there's got to be times where you're locked out, except emergencies. You know, that's true. If you took the pastor of a church with 40 people tomorrow, what would you set as a weekly schedule for yourself? That has a lot of applications because the fact is the 40 people may be able to financially support you maybe part-time or full-time or whatever the case. It may be in a brand-new church. It may be people that have been around a while and assume the responsibility. The church may have money in it, in the bank, and they're able to support you while you're trying to get the church going and stuff. So there's a lot of variables in there. But I would not hesitate. When we started the church, I didn't raise money. They didn't raise it back in the day, so I started the church. I got a job laying block and brick. And I mean, you know, you handle 60-pound blocks all day long, setting them up on a wall as a tender, then eventually lay them, and then running a 90-pound jackhammer all day long as far as that. I think the people respect it, but you also have to be careful they don't expect it. You know, they have to be taught that you take care of the pastor. Evangelist one time, and I said, now, let me ask you a question. As an evangelist, what is your responsibility? And he said, well, we're supposed to preach things that you can't to your people. I said, I don't think there's anything you can preach to my people that I won't or can. I thought I was supposed to preach the full counsel of God. Well, you know, and then sometimes people say, you need to take care of your pastor. You need to make sure that he has to. And I can understand that, but I think if the men, now we used to have men's meetings, not just deacons meetings, but men's meetings, and have coffee and whatever the case, have men's meeting, not weekly or whatever. Sometimes they weren't every month, but we'd have men's meeting and talk about stuff that's going on. And usually when I went to get something passed in church, you know, because we still had, you know, everybody vote on it as far as that. I would say the men have suggested to the church that we do this. Because we've already talked about it in an men's meeting. You know where I learned it? From doing something dumb. We raised, I think, $300,000 to build a building when we bought property, 12 acres, and we built a new building on it. We got it done, got the lawn in and everything else. A fella gave the church an N8 Ford tractor with a flailing machine for a mower, 8 foot wide flailing machine. So we had like about 6 acres to mow. So mowing the lawn, but the thing is, it was you couldn't do anything close work or anything like that. He was a guy that worked with equipment, so he got a hold of one of these Steiners. I don't know if you're familiar with them. It was a diesel oscillating joint in the middle, and it had like, I don't know what it was, maybe 60-inch cut or something in that nature. And he could get it for $4,500. Now, this was back in 1987 or so. He said, I'll sell the N8 Ford tractor. I can get $3,000 for that, because he's bought and sold equipment. He said, I can get it, and it only had 100 hours on it. And he said, I can get it for $4,500. That would be $1,500 we had to pay on it. I said, man, that's a great idea. I brought it before the church in a business meeting. I said, folks, and we talked about it. Yeah, Jed, hey, did you look down at the mowers they have down at Frank's garage sale? And another one raised their hand and said, you know, I saw a good one down here. I had about 10 people raise their hand to advise me or advise the church that we had to look some, you know. Now, there's a couple of things. And then one even guy at the end, I don't know whether he understood the craziness. He said, well, why don't we just buy some goats and stake them out back on those hills there? I mean, you know, so I can't tell how serious he was. But anyway, I said, folks, listen, we're going to table it right now. I said, we just spent, we spent $300,000. We did the building ourselves. $300,000 on a building, and we can't get together on $1,500 to buy a lawnmower to mow 6 acres. I even asked, how many of you have a lawnmower? You know, how much you pay for it? $4,500. How much you pay for it? $3,600. How much you pay for it? $5,500. So when Brother Wise was learning things at church, that's what he was learning from my mistakes. You know. So after that, we'd have men's meetings. The men would decide, talk about it, and say, yeah, let's go with it. And every business meeting we had, I always said the men recommend that we do this. The only time I recommended, if I knew that's what God wanted, that's all. I didn't pull rank or anything. I just said that I believe God would have us to do this, whatever. Would you describe the type of relationship you had or tried to develop with the demons of your church, deacons of your church? I think we have to be careful that they don't become a board and think that they have power. Let's get biblical. Sir.
When I became the pastor of First Bible Baptist Church, every one of the deacons came to me and said, if you want me to step down, step down.
Yeah. They had the right spirit.
They served the pastor.
Yeah. They served, they were at the service of the pastor because, yeah. Yeah, right. No, and that's important because, and the thing is, if you go into a church that has deacons that think they have an authority in it, I think you need to discuss it, not to just say, well, first of all, you guys are all fired. I don't think necessarily. You better find out what the Lord wants you to do, but you may want to do some educating. And really, so these men's meetings, the deacons were there, but the deacons weren't deciding exclusively. If I don't remember anything where I had to bring the deacons in and say, fellas, this is something, you know, it's not for pillow talk, it's not for whatever the case may be. But I'm just saying that I did it with all the men, and everybody that wanted to come came. And then the men recommended to the church to vote and get something, but yeah, don't have a board, because you'll get somebody on there that, and whether you do it by years or lifetime or as long as they're serving, they're servants. Acts the 6th chapter. I know it says in Timothy as well. They're serving. They're a testimony to other people, not lords. So yeah, that with a demon. So the relationship would be the same thing as with the other men. not exclusive. I think it's important for people to understand there are deacons. Now in New York State, you have to have trustees because we surrendered ourselves to corporation laws in the state. You probably didn't do that, but I did. And the thing is, they weren't. They'd have trustees, and they were part. They were made up of part. They only had to have, let's see, I think two or three. I can't remember now. But they were the deacon board, and all their purpose, their responsibility was all they were supposed to do was sign a piece of paper. That's it. They had no authority over the finances or anything else. Said that in the documents of the church. They were there for signing, for sell a property, buy a property, or anything financial in that way. So, yeah, no, you want to be close to them, but you want to be close with them so you're not a clique or exclusive club. I want the guy that comes in that knows me. Yes, sir. They want money. You don't want to be a president? And they're like, I don't blame you as far as that. Did you develop a good strategy for dealing with grief of losing members because of disagreements? That's always a painful thing because you think about it. Church is part of their life. It's all of your life. It's everything. People don't realize 24/7 is your pastor. I mean, your mind is going all the time. You got a heartache, you know, you're thinking at night, how can I do it different? Or what can I do to retrieve this person? So dealing with it is something God gives us the opportunity to understand, and he gives us that peace. And I always would say if somebody wanted to leave the church here in disagreement with me about something, I would always say to them, I'd say, listen, you know, you're leaving, you've made that decision. I want you to go someplace and serve the Lord. If I wasn't going to be able to convince them, I don't say stuff like God's going to kill your firstborn. He may kill mine. You know? The thing is that I want to try to convince them, saying maybe I ought to think about it and pray about it or whatever. But it was some issue that they had or whatever, and they're leaving. But seldom did they ever go to a church and serve the Lord. And it's a real heartache. So that part of it, I don't know how you deal with it or a strategy or anything other than the fact of there's a lot of people in, you know, 50 years of ministering that you look back and they're out in the world somewhere. You couldn't find them with a telescope. It's a real tragedy. It's a heartache. But they saved that? I don't know. That's not I'm not the judge. I remember one time I was at a political meeting and they had me come in and pray. I said, man, I drove 20 minutes. I'm not going to pray for 20 minutes. So I'd always say something to them, you know, I'd tell them something or whatever about the gospel or whatever. And there was supposed to be ice the very next day, and the road superintendent of there, that city, said something about, you know, folks. And he said, well, maybe if Pastor Young will pray, you know, that we don't have the ice because it's supposed to be real bad roads tomorrow morning. I said, well, I'm not in the administration. I'm in sales. You know, it's up to him in that. What approach would you take to correct volunteers who are consistently late? I'm going to throw that one to the crowd. I'll tell you what. Now, it was funny because I was a Michigan pastor, and I said, and they come in late, and we'd have teacher meetings every week. I said, listen, I'll tell you what. From now on, if you'll be in your classroom set up, ready to teach, and greet the kids that are coming in off the bus, 20 minutes early, I'll give you $20. And man, their eyes got big. You know? I said, I'm not going to give you $20. You nuts. You know, but you'll do it at the workplace. You'll punch in the right time. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I didn't have a rash of it or whatever, but there are certainly, I had a piano player. First piano player I had come up to the piano. You know, everybody's in the auditorium coming up, and the church has already supposedly started, you know, as far as that. Help us. That'll give you ulcers. But I don't know. Anybody got any ideas about that as far as volunteers getting there on time, other than teaching them what's right and what's wrong? I know we do that, but I didn't have a total rash of it. They knew that I thought you should be there on time. And these kids, I tell them, you walk in a classroom and there's nobody there. And you don't spend 10, 20 minutes talking to the kids that come in and say, how was your week and what's going on? What do you like? And, you know, no kidding, you play some baseball. Did you win anything or whatever? They want to talk to somebody. You build relationships. I never, when I got done preaching, my personal preference, I don't like to move during prayer time. I'll say this, and it may offend somebody, but you got to, when you're preaching, sometimes offend people, right? Okay. The thing is, prayer time is not time to get everybody in position. I'm like, God's going to all of a sudden make me go paralyzed until it's over or something like that. But I'm just saying different things we experience in ministry as far as that important. But consistency, it's practice. We never start a service late. Start on time. Because there's some people who believe you have to start on time, and other people, if they're going to be late, they're going to be late. That's all. Anybody got a comment on that before I get the hook? You bought the cow. I saw you went there. Been in too many auctions to watch for movement like that. All right, brother, come up. I'm run a little late, but I'll give some time back during the message. I hope I did okay for you.
Yes, sir.
Very, I mean, very good. There's guys out here who know a whole lot more than I do.
Appreciate that very much. Thank you, Pastor Young. If you have any other questions for him, obviously after the meeting is over, I'm sure he'll be glad to answer questions or whatever. And obviously,
that's one of the blessings of a fellowship too, is we can ask one another questions and maybe get some ideas, especially from those who have been in the ministry longer than we have personally, and I would encourage you to do that. Let's do this. Let's just take about a 5-minute break real quick, give you an opportunity to use the restroom or whatever. So just a couple of minutes before 3:30, we will start the service, that second and last service here. All right, so you are dismissed, and feel free to use the restroom. Again, there's one up here, two down there, and feel free. All right, we'll see you in a few minutes.